the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Ball game, Blue Jays. 5-4 over the Cincinnati Reds as the Blue Jays sweep the Reds out of town.
It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's At the Letters for Wednesday, May 31st on sports.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host Ben Nicholson-Smith on a Wednesday night after the ball game. What's up, Ben?
Beautiful night in Toronto. Oh, man.
Beautiful day in Toronto.
So nice, in fact. You would wonder if they might actually open the roof, but they did not. So we were playing, we were watching indoor baseball.
They've tried to open the roof on days where it's like, it might rain, it's kind of cold, and they've still like tried it, and I've been legitimately cold. And then today it's gorgeous, and they don't open it.
Perfect weather.
I understand.
It's a little confusing, but hey, we had one roof open game on Sunday, and hopefully many more to come.
Was Sunday roof? Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's the first one.
They've made some upgrades to the roof. It moves faster this year. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, no, it actually does.
Yeah, it moves like way faster.
Yeah.
So anyway, nobody cares about that. What people care about is that the Toronto Blue Jays won today over the Cincinnati Reds 5-4. It was a series sweep of the Reds and the Blue Jays now, today, are one game under 500.
Isn't that weird?
How did this happen? What's going on here? I should also mention, before we get too deep into this, is that later in the podcast, we will talk to Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. Certainly you have noticed that when you look at the minor league reports every day, Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette are doing something. So we're going to get kind of an on-the-ground report from the always entertaining and interesting and lyrical Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. So that'll come up in the second half. But yeah, hey, I am surprised. But here we are with June about to start, and the Blue Jays are a game of within 500. Like, they made up a lot of ground this month.
Yeah, and if you had told me that the Blue Jays were going to have a really good month of June, for example, I'd say, all right, sure, that's easy to believe. Yeah. Now they have a really good Major League Baseball team on the field because Donaldson and Tulowitzki and Happ and Liriano are actually members of this team. But in May, they were essentially playing without those guys for the vast majority of the month. And so to expect that kind of performance, an 18-10 record, I think was unrealistic. And that's why at the time when, 4 weeks ago, our podcasts were probably veering into some pretty negative territory as recently as a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely.
And yet with those pieces that a lot of people would call secondary pieces, they've can't really explain how, but somehow they've won 18 games.
I did not think they'd get to this point by the end of May. I did not. Like you said, unrealistic is a great way of putting it because that's what it was. It's completely unrealistic. Like, hey, let's take away your best players. You're already playing like crap. Let's throw a bunch of replacement level guys in there. You've got no starting pitching depth whatsoever. See how you do.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and the Blue Jays have done it. Now they've, like, I guess, the caveat is that they've had a bit of a soft spot in the schedule. We think about they had, four against Seattle who were, beat the hell up. They had four against Atlanta, even though Atlanta ended up taking three of those. Two against Milwaukee, three against Cincinnati. Texas wasn't playing great when they came in. I think we still need to see it against the New York Yankees this weekend. I think we still need to see it against the Boston Red Sox. And I think we still need to see it against the Baltimore Orioles, who were here last week or when they were here recently, I believe.
Jays visited Baltimore.
The Jays were there and dropped 2 of 3. I think you still need to see it in the division. But the Blue Jays did what they needed to do this month by going 18-10. Like, they got themselves back level, which is what needed to happen.
Well, I actually think that it would have been a lot to ask the Blue Jays to go out there and hold steady. Like, if they had gone out and played 14-14 baseball with the roster that they had, I think that that would have been probably, optimistic. And yet they did four games better than that to go 18-10. Now you can envision them getting, it's possible that they're back at 500 on Thursday. So that's, that would be the point in the season where you say, okay, now it's time to take the next push and actually get yourself into playoff contention. Because that's the funny thing, too, about all this.
They have to keep going.
Yeah. They're not done. They still have to put another streak together. The only thing now is it's easier to envision because you have Josh Donaldson hitting balls into the fifth deck and you have Tulowitzki back at shortstop.
Yeah. It's funny to think if the Blue Jays hadn't started, was it 2-11 or whatever it was? If they hadn't started or that poorly, this run that they've had in May, where would it have taken them, you know? Instead of it just kind of getting them back up to 500, this could have been the run that, you know, where they just build a nice lead in the division. Now, if you go out and you lose four or five in a row, I mean, that's a harder pill to swallow than if you were building the lead. But yeah, no, you're right. It's a good point. Like the Blue Jays, they have to keep going.
Yeah, they definitely
they have to keep doing this. And so can they, when you look at some of the offensive performances that they've had in May, Jose Bautista just hitting the cover off the ball. Devin Travis having what could be a player of the month campaign in May. Justin Smoke having a terrific May. How confident are you in some of these runs continuing?
So I think that when you look at the Blue Jays offense as a whole, it actually looks like a pretty good offense right now. And so individually, I mean, you're going to see fluctuations month to month from guys like Kevin Pillar getting cold, Bautista gets hot. Who knows? Maybe Morales is the next guy to really go on a surge for the Blue Jays. But I think as a group, when you have this team or this lineup 1 through 9 with a bench that's now stronger too, it's just easier to envision this team scoring runs. And I think they're an above average offense, kind of going back to what we would have said at the beginning of the year. I don't think they're the best offense in baseball, but I think that they're a top 10 offense in Major League Baseball if they're healthy.
Interesting. When you look at the pitching side of things, Marco Estrada and Marcus Stroman carrying the load as you might expect them to. Who has thrown the third most pitches? So those two have thrown the two most innings in May. Who's thrown the third?
So I know for the I know the answer to this for the season.
Do you know?
So I'm guessing it's Joe Biagini.
Sure is.
Yeah,
Joe Biagini. Who would have thunk that?
Yeah, and you know who number four is in the season?
No.
You want to guess?
The season.
So for the season, we have Stroman and Estrada have thrown the most pitches for this team,
right?
Most innings as well. And number three is Biagini, and number four.
It's Bulsinger in May. It can't be for April as well. Is it a bullpen guy? Is it Danny Barnes?
It is Ryan Tepera.
Is it Ryan Tepera? Yeah, he has thrown a lot of innings.
He has thrown a ton.
He's on track for like well over 90 innings, which is something that's going to have to be curtailed going forward, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't think that's sustainable in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, when you look at his innings right now, he's at 30.1. And we're 2 months into the season. That's so, yeah, crazy. He's on a pace to go over 90.
That's insane. That's crazy. So it's kind of funny to look at the guys who have done it for them. Like Estrada, Stroman, you would expect. Joe Biagini, 25 innings pitched in May, had a 4.68 ERA. Mike Bulsinger, 20 and a third innings in May. You know, like they haven't done it with their name brand guys on the mound.
And what's interesting about their pitching in May is if you look at these numbers are going to change slightly based on the result of the finale against the Reds. But their rotation ERA entering the final game was 4.72. So as a group, the rotation wasn't very good. Then you look at what their bullpen did in the month of May. They had a 3.08 ERA.
Right.
And the innings are pretty comparable. I mean, the bullpen didn't pitch quite as many innings, but the Jays had to lean on their bullpen really heavily. And the results they got from those guys were, on the whole, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you could see a future where with Jay Happ back in the rotation, Francisco Liriano back in the rotation, Joe Biagini just kind of getting a bit more used to being a starter. I think he's just needed to face some of those fifth, sixth inning situations, third time through the order situations, just get accustomed to that. You would assume that he's going to get better and get, more stretched out and more, be able to last deeper into starts. You can foresee a future where the Blue Jays actually pitch a lot better going forward than they have to this point.
Yeah, and I think that the balance of innings from the rotation compared to innings from the bullpen has to shift.
Yeah.
You can't keep asking your bullpen for so many innings, especially when it's the same guys over and over.
Right.
If it was, hey, J.P. Howell's getting in there a ton too, and he's shouldering part of the load, then that's a different story. But he's not. They don't trust him. They're not using him. So he's on the sidelines for all intents and purposes. That means that your guys like Danny Barnes and Ryan Tepera, Biagini when he was in there, Joe Smith, who's quietly having a phenomenal year.
Unbelievable.
All these guys are getting used a ton.
The strikeouts of Joe Smith are insane.
On that point, Smith last year, in what was a pretty solid year, earned him a $3 million contract. He struck out 40 guys. here we are in May. He has 39 strikeouts. I mean, it's Joe Smith is doing some things on the mound.
Oh, absolutely. We are starting to see those kind of fissures in the bullpen a little bit the last few games, I would say. We've seen, you know, Danny Barnes give up a couple bombs. Ryan Tepera didn't look great on Tuesday against Cincinnati. A couple walks, some hard contact. Roberto Osuna comes in the ninth on Wednesday in the finale against Cincinnati. Gives up a first pitch, just hammer of a home run. Gets a strikeout, but then, you know, single error behind him. I mean, you're starting to see those cracks a little bit, I would say.
I want to throw a couple bullpen questions at you here.
Okay.
So, first, Jason Grilli, he's gone scoreless, I think, 9 of his last 10 outings. Do you buy it? Is he back?
Facing lower leverage, right? You know, and I think that he's not facing situations that he was before. So you're not going to know until he faces those situations again. I haven't looked at it close enough. I need to look at his location because that's what was killing him earlier, is just leaving that slider on the plate. So if I could, you know, I'll get back to you on that and look at his location and kind of say, like, all right, has he made the adjustments or not? But I mean, it's certainly encouraging. Are you buying it?
Not entirely. Really.
Yeah. You need to see him in leverage, yeah. Right? That's the thing, you know, like it's one thing to do it in the spots he's been doing it in lately. He's been kind of, you know, on par with JP Howell in the packing order in the bullpen lately. You kind of need to see him in some more leverage situations.
And that's the other guy I want to ask about. So JP Howell, they've barely used him. They used him back-to-back games Sunday, Monday. And aside from that, he had been used for less than 5 innings all season long.
He went like 2 weeks without getting into a game.
Yeah. So clearly they don't trust him. They don't use him. What do you do with this? What do you do here?
I don't know. Well, I don't know if you have to do anything yet.
Yeah.
You know, like, because look, you got the roster move coming with Liriano this weekend.
So they DFA Bolsinger.
You would think that's what they're going to do. I would say the option, like, B there would be you could send Loop to Buffalo.
I think you might need Loop.
But yeah, you might need him as a lefty.
He's been too good to.
Even though the Yankees aren't quite as lefty crazy as they once were, you still got, you know, Gardner, Ellsbury in that lineup. I think so. You don't have to do anything with Howell yet. If you came to a spot where you were in a real roster bind, you might think about, you know, we're not using JP Howell. Why is he here? But you're also in on him for $3 million. So you'd like to see if you can turn it around.
Yeah.
Has he inspired much confidence when you have seen him on the mound of late?
No.
Yeah.
Not for me, not for the Toronto Blue Jays.
No.
I mean, if they were truly confident, they would use him more. I mean, I think it's pretty clear.
That's what's kind of interesting about how good the bullpen's been in May, is that with these two, you know, and no offense to these guys, but with Howell and Grilli essentially not doing a lot, the bullpen's been really good. Yep. Danny Barnes, really good. Slide into that Joe Biagini role perfectly. Like, hey, you got one out and two on, bring in Danny Barnes, yep. And then let him get you, you know, give him the next inning as well, get you 5 outs. Yep. Ryan Tepera working with a clean inning. He went 19 innings without giving up a run. Great. Roberto Osuna, turn things around. We remember when we were all worried about Roberto Osuna? So the bullpen's been really good. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that, look, bullpen's going to be a roller coaster. And it's very much on an up right now.
Yeah.
You got to think there's a down around the corner.
Yeah, and if the Blue Jays are able to stay in it, I think bullpen has got to be an area they look at. You know, if they're in ad mode in July, you know, yeah. I think that the areas that we thought they'd be looking at, like first base, for example, Justin Smoke, I mean, I think you ride that out. I think you're happy with Smoke. But the bullpen, in contrast to that, I think you've got to look to add, because you can't keep going. Joe Smith right now has pitched in more than half their games.
It's crazy.
You can't do that. You can't have a guy pitch 80 games and then another guy pitch 90 innings unless you're willing to run the risk that they get hurt.
Yeah, unless it's like you have Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller.
Yeah.
Which the Blue Jays do not.
No.
You know?
And I mean, even then, like if you're using those guys at that level, like the way Joe Torre used Scott Proctor, well, you got to be ready for the injury. Exactly. For the possibility that could happen.
The consequences of your actions.
And there's a time to ride these guys really hard. And I think that's in September and October. I don't think it's in June. So that's and they know that too. This isn't news to them. They know that. But this is why June they need more from the rotation.
And look, you take Joe Biagini out of that bullpen. He logged a lot of innings, man. He got you through a lot of those like 6th, 7th innings. You know, he got you out of a lot of jams. And you don't have that anymore. Danny Barnes has done great filling in there, but you're right. This is, they need to tip that balance back to the starting rotation. You mentioned Justin Smoke. Nobody talks about Justin Smoke's contract anymore. When we used to talk about it all the damn time, he's essentially like giving you the value of the entire deal. You made this point earlier at the ballpark. He's essentially giving you the value of the entire deal this season.
Yeah.
I don't really have a question for you.
No, it's,
I just
it's,
had to point it out.
Yeah.
I just feel like we don't say enough. Like Justin Smoke's putting together a really nice year.
We should point it out for sure. Yeah. And he's already over one WAR on the season. And if you were to say, hey, Justin Smoke's going to hit 12 home runs for you, then that might be good for the year. I mean, yeah. Honestly. Yeah. And here he is having done that at the end of May with an OPS over 900. I mean, the production has been great. The defense has been really steady. And he's been one of the few guys, along with Kevin Pillar, who've been kind of reasonably steady offensive forces all year, for what that's worth. I mean, it's not a competition in who can be the steadiest. You want overall production in the course of a long season. But I think there's probably some value in having a guy who's in there producing week after week.
You mentioned Kevin Pillar in a bit of a slump over his last kind of week and a half. Saw him get the day off on Wednesday. Talked to John Gibbons. He said, yeah, he needed it. He's grinding right now. We've seen the approach kind of revert a little bit, which is discouraging. I think Kevin Pillar can get back to that really good approach that he showed over the first 6 weeks of the season. He did it for 6 weeks. You know, there's no reason why he can't get back to doing that. And I don't think the league has adjusted to him in a huge way. I just think he's kind of expanding again. And I think that he needs to snap out of that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And just as, you know, we've seen these cold stretches from Pillar, and we know that's part of who he is as a player, is he's going to go through stretches where he expands too much. And the contact that he makes is a lot of 6-3 ground outs. But we've also now seen a new possible world for Kevin Pillar to exist in, you know, yeah. And that's the one that he played in for the first 6 weeks of the season. So now that we've seen that he can do this against major league pitching, which is the difference. Before, we'd seen him do it against minor league pitching. So we've seen him excel against major league pitching for, let's say, 200 plate appearances.
Yep.
So maybe he can do that again for another 100 down the road. And it'll be a process of going back and forth, struggling, hot streak, cold streak. And then at the end of the year, you probably look up and see some decent numbers.
And you want to talk about a player who has been two players in one, Devin Travis. April, Devin Travis went 130, 193, 195. May, coming into Wednesday's game, when he hit a home run, and what do you do in his other plate appearances here? One for four. But so these numbers will be a bit lower. But coming into Wednesday's game, 368, 378, 632.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said earlier, maybe a player of the month in the American League or major leagues.
Yeah, it's been incredible.
Wild.
He's hitting the ball really hard.
You don't expect, like, when a guy is that bad in April, for him to just make it back immediately in one. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of think, okay, so he's really bad in April. Maybe he'll just kind of be himself in May and just kind of level out. You don't expect him to go that far in the other direction.
Yeah, now if you look at his season stats, overall, he's been an above-average player. When you look at all the doubles that he's hit, I think he leads Major League Baseball in doubles, and that's a pretty useful thing to do with a plate appearance is hit a double, so that's definitely helping him out and helping the Jays out. And I mean, it's not something that could possibly be sustained, but they'll take it.
After Wednesday's game, he's up to a 95 weighted runs created plus, so he's almost average.
Yeah, by OPS plus, he's 103. So.
Yeah. Right around it. So that you think about like this torrential May that he's had, he is now, that has made his like aggregate stats basically average, which is how bad his April was.
Right. And yeah, when you think about, hey, if you have a second baseman who can play solid defense, which I would say he has, and provide average offensive stats, then you're looking at a guy who's probably a 2 or 3 win player in the course of a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And last guy that we want to touch on, Jose Bautista. He's just looks like himself again. And, you know, he's not chasing as like he was earlier in the year. He's not missing his fastball like he was earlier in the year. He just looks more fearsome, I guess, if that's the word, intimidating at the plate. Like he just looks like he looks like himself again at the plate.
Yeah, and his numbers are back to where they were. Actually, they're a little better than where they were last year.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy when you think about the highs and lows of his season so far and how bad he looked, how lost he looked, his approach. By his own admission, was very much off in the early part of the season. Now it's on. He's producing. He's hitting, just crushing baseballs. I mean, the home runs are there. You look at the on-base percentage, it's there. All of a sudden, he's on track for that 30-homer, 350, 360 on-base percentage season, and that makes his $18 million contract look like a really good deal.
Right, and what will that make him going into 2018?
Yeah. Another question mark. I mean, it's that's the impossible thing to predict. Although I will. Speaking of contracts, throw one at you.
Yeah, please.
What do you think about Rich Hill 48-3 as a comp for Estrada if he keeps this up? Because Hill was old when he signed. Hill was like 36.
Yeah, Estrada's going to be 34. I want to say.
Yeah, I think he'll be.
I'll look it up quickly if you want to just kill some time.
So when you look at Hill, he's someone who didn't pitch that many innings, but the quality of the innings was so good.
Estrada will be 34.
34.
Yeah.
So I wonder.
Hill, you have a very distinct injury history, though, with the blisters, right? So you build that into, you know, you have to be a bit, there has to be a bit of caution there with Estrada. His worst injury last year, he pitched through it and was great.
So you think even more?
Maybe.
Wow.
I mean, you add up what he's done in the regular season. I think we can all admit now that it's real. Right? Like, years has people been writing him off and saying, oh, no, he's still that Brewers guy? No, this is what he is now. And the postseason performances. You look at what he's done in the postseason. You talk to some, like, execs, and they'll tell you, like, a really good postseason start is worth, like, 3 or 4 or 5 regular season starts.
Yeah. And the swinging strikes now are up.
The strikeouts.
Like, checking the... And it's not just because umps are giving him the corner or... There's some sort of flukish element to his season.
Because he's nasty.
Right. Yeah. And so when you look at the swinging strike leaderboard, it's like DeGrom, Chris Sale, Chris Archer, and Estrada. I mean, it's pretty incredible, the company that he's in when it comes to missing bats.
His changeup right now is in an unbelievable place. Like, it's the changeup. Anybody who throws one will tell you it's the ultimate feel pitch. And so, you know, sometimes it can kind of be hard to explain when it's like eluding a pitcher. But when you have the good feel for it and it's coming out of your hand the right way and it's got good action and your arm looks like you're throwing a fastball and like everything's clicking, it's a devastating pitch.
Yeah. So he's gone from, you know, likely trade chip to a guy that the Jays are really relying on.
Who knows where he'll be at when we do this next week.
Yeah, it's true. they have a knack for shifting things up in a hurry on this year.
It's kind of, the ATLs are kind of like the postmarks, you know what I mean? Of like when, you know, how things change.
I think two weeks ago, it looked really bad.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah,
2 weeks ago.
I didn't think, like I said off the top, I did not think they were going to be where they are now. It wasn't realistic.
Because at one point, our producer, Sam, came to us after the show and he was like, guys, or boys, is probably what he said.
Yeah.
That was extremely negative. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we definitely depressed him, for sure. One person who will definitely not depress you is Jesse Goldberg Strassler. He's the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. He's going to tell us all about Vlad Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, and some of the other prospects down there in A-ball when we come back on At the Letters. Pleased to be joined now by the voice of Lansing Lugnuts, Jesse Goldberg Strassler. Jesse, thanks so much for joining us today. Look, every day I open up the Blue Jays minor league reports, and it seems like every day, another two hits for Vlad Jr., another two hits for Bo Bichette. It's unbelievable. What's it like getting to watch these two guys play every day?
Actually, I get kind of surprised that they only have two hits because I'm wondering what happened those other at-bats.
Yeah, it's pretty...
It's exceptional. But yeah, they're tremendous talents, and they really are. When you think about their ages, that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is still only 18, and that he only, before this year, had one professional baseball season. I think of him like a Terminator, where he's processing new information, and suddenly the next day he comes out and he can now hit a pitch that he couldn't hit yesterday. And then there's Bo Bichette, who looks much younger than his 19 years, and yet you can't stop him from getting hits either. It's fantastic to watch.
With Guerrero in particular, I mean, you look at his youth, and you mentioned the fact that he's just 18 years old. What kind of challenges does he face as a young player in the Midwest League?
Oh, that's a really good question because there's probably many answers to it. He's away from home. He comes from the Dominican Republic, even though he was born in Montreal. And though he's working hard to learn English, he still does not have command of the language. And so still, even if I'm talking to him directly with no pressure on the line, no interview or anything like that, he still needs to have an interpreter there. And I love to sit in on his English classes to watch it coming along. And he can break down that barrier with his teammates. But in the real world, when it comes time to order food or whatever decisions need to be made, there remains the language barrier. Now, on the bright side for him, he's very popular, and guys can't wait to help him out because he's such a good teammate. But there's that, and there's the fact that he actually is 18. And so you just you just expect him to be a kid in everything that goes on and trying to structure your life. We have college aged players who are trying to figure out a process for their day. What should their routine be? And so regardless of routine, on, off the field, eating right, working out right, putting yourself in position to be the best baseball player you can, he's learning all about this. He's learning what it's like to slump or what it's like to suddenly get flummoxed at the plate, or let's say it's a very hot day, or let's say it's raining terribly. All of those different things. He'd never had to deal with the cold that we threw at him in the month of April. Thank you, Michigan climate. So welcome to all of this newness that he's never had to deal with before.
You know, he's obviously a prodigious talent. We're talking about a guy who was ranked number 20 by Baseball America coming into this year and on their list of 100 top prospects. He's got a 932 OPS with Lansing right now at a level that he's too young for. But, you know, what kind of a sense have you gotten of his personality? You know, you kind of mentioned that, you know, taking English classes and maybe, you know, just kind of getting accustomed to the culture. Do you get a sense of what kind of a kid he is?
He is effervescent. He is a heck of a teammate and a heck of a friend. We have a slugger on the team who's 21 named Bradley Jones. And if you picture a guy out of Travelers Rest, South Carolina, you're probably picturing Bradley. Loves to go mudding in his he loves to just go riding around. He's a very simple sort. And you get Bradley and you get Vladdy right there, and the two of them not speaking the same English, and it does not matter. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a heck of a guy. His enthusiasm is contagious. If there's a walk-off celebration to be had, he is the first guy out there on the field. Ryan Hissey just walked off with a single, and there's Vladdy with a full bucket of water to dump it in his face as soon as he turns around. Bo Bichette walked off with a single 3 days later, and suddenly there's Vladdy with a bear hug for him as he turns around. The guys love him, and Bradley Jones has said, and he said openly in interviews and outside of interviews, look, that is the most humble guy that I've ever met, and I don't even know why he's so humble. He just is. He's just out there to play baseball and have a good time.
When you look at this stat line from afar, so in Toronto, we're looking at it, we see, okay, 329 average, 426 on base percentage, more walks than strikeouts. What does an actual Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at bat look like? I mean, what's his plate approach? What does he look like when he's up there at the plate?
Well, I'll tell you that it ends with a rocket because he consistently hits the ball harder than anybody else in the league. And I remember at the start of this year, he had the 117 mile an hour ball that he knocked off his bat.
Right.
After that, they said to us, hey, let's not publicize how fast he's hitting it. We don't want it to get too big. But nobody hits the ball harder. When he steps in, there's a presence about him. And let me walk you up to home plate. First, he holds the bat in his barrel. And with the handle of the bat, he reaches down and he writes Dios into the dirt of the home plate circle, God in Spanish. And then he takes the bat and he taps the catcher and he taps the umpire, show of respect. And I asked him when he started doing that. And he said growing up back home, he knew everyone. He knew the umpire. He knew the catcher. Nobody's told him to stop, but that's just something he's always done, just to say hello.
Wow.
So then he steps in, and he's got the bat waggling. Every now and then he'll rest it on his right shoulder for a moment, but he is as comfortable as can be. And he stares out to the mound, and you're not sure, is he going to uncork on the first pitch of the at-bat, or is he going to just sit there and stare and take a pitch and take another pitch? There is no hurry with him, but when he attacks, it is violent. He will go after the pitches violently for strike one, violently for strike two. Then he cuts down, and it becomes a very hand-oriented swing. If he gets down on the count, nothing and two. Suddenly he's leaning over, and the hands fly through, and he wraps the pitch back up through the middle, or he racks it into right field. And if the at-bat continues, if he starts fouling off pitch after pitch, the swings start to get bigger again, back to a strike one swing and back to a strike two swing. And he's hit some strike two home runs this year, because he suddenly felt, I've got this guy. This pitcher's not going to put it past me. When he lets it go, it's either him or Bo. I'm not sure which one has the bigger swing on the team, which means one of the biggest swings in the league.
Right.
But it is something. It's the sort of swing and miss that the crowd is still ready to applaud for.
So you're saying he's good?
I'm saying he's a pretty darn good hitter.
Well, that was quite a scenic picture you painted for us there, and I'm glad that you did, because I hope you can do the same for Bo Bichette, who is one of my favorite guys to just watch highlights of. I haven't gotten to see him actually play up close yet, but I mean, you look at the big leg kick, and he looks like he plays at 100 miles an hour, and he's got the hair flying out the back of his helmet. What's the Bo Bichette experience like?
Bo is very different from Vladdy in terms of there's something about Bo and the way that he goes about it. With Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you never know. It could be a wicked line drive, or you know what? The back could be a flame out, and he could foul out, or he could ground out, and he'd go, ah, you know what? He's growing. This is fun. He'll go 4-for-4 tomorrow. He'll take an 0-for today. Bo Bichette, every single at-bat, I'm going, he's got two more hits today. And just to take the last 2 days, so first 2 days ago, he knocks a home run to right field. That was a towering home run that he took a pitch to the outer half, and away it went. And then his home run today, it was low and in, and he went down, and he served a line drive right past the left field foul pole. His plate approach, I think, is smoothing out over this year as he's figuring out, how do pitchers want to pitch me, and what should I do about it? It's very scientific, and I've asked him about it, about that big leg kick, about everything about it. I think he understands his swing as well as or better than anybody else that we've got. He does such a good job of taking the ball to the opposite field, especially. And he just has a way about it where he can hit a fly ball and serve it where nobody's going to get it, where he looks at the right fielder and suddenly here's a fly ball right down the right field line for a nice easy double. Or here's a line drive into the left center gap or a line drive into the right center gap. I would call him much more of a musician at home plate. Whereas Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the violence, at Bo Bichette, it's just, I'm going to strike this ball. I'm going to strike it hard. And I've got myself another knock. And a couple of days ago, he came up twice with two outs and a tying runner in scoring position. And both times he delivered him, and both times he didn't try to do too much. For a 19-year-old, it's once again, it's like watching a prodigy at work.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. And for both these guys, they're having just incredible offensive seasons. So much so that to talk about their defense almost seems besides the point. But I do want to ask you, where are these two guys at, Guerrero and Bichette, when it comes to their defense?
I think that the defense is behind the offense. I think that with Bo Bichette, they're enjoying moving him from shortstop to second, try him out here, try him out there, as he goes deep into the hole or maybe ranges to his left or charges in from behind the middle. It's fun to watch him work around. It's the same thing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is signed as an outfielder, and so he's very young at playing third base. I think that both of these guys have done a lot more hitting in their life than defending. Bo more at shortstop than, let's say, Vladdy at third, but it's not like they're embarrassing themselves out there. They are not butchers. One of Guerrero's favorite plays is to charge in, and he's got a heck of a strong arm. And then Bo Bichette, it's all about his athleticism that he enjoys. And in an interview with him, I asked him one question, and he must have said being an athlete 3 or 4 times, that he loves seeing what he can pull off, what he can try. And if it didn't work one time, then okay, he'll adjust the next time. But so far, I would not say anything embarrassing about it. I'd say it's fun to watch both of them go to work.
You know, I got to watch them do just that in spring training. I saw them take batting practice over on the minor league side one day, and it seemed like they have a pretty cool kind of, I don't know, repartee, if you will. Like, it seems like they kind of get along with each other, and they can kind of joke around and banter with each other. And I don't think it's a mistake that they've kind of been tied to each other this year. What have you seen from kind of the relationship between the two, being around them every day?
There really isn't that ego that shoves aside. Mm-hmm. It really more is the appreciation that I am here with another great talent. And I think you can compare that to all sorts of different avenues of life. But when you've got two great talents that feed off of each other, look at it at the major league level with Toronto, or you can look at it with other sports where guys have this admiration that, hey, I know I'm good, and I got this guy here too. So I'll get on, he'll knock me in, or I don't get it done, he will get it done. There's such that joy that they're about the same age, and that even though that they come from different backgrounds, there's that same passion for playing and that appreciation for the other's ability. I bet you that neither one of these guys, when they played baseball going around, they have not seen too many people who are as good as them. And that right now they've got people who are as good as them. Bo can look at Vladdy, or Vladdy can look at Bo and say, that guy is a heck of a ball player. And I know that Vladdy actually thinks that Bradley Jones is really, really great, and he bats next in the order. Bo second, Vlad third, Bradley fourth. They love the fact that they're playing with great talent, that they don't feel the pressure is on them. But yes, that chemistry is easy to see on the field. There are no poker faces.
And I do want to ask you about Bradley Jones too, because in contrast to Guerrero, who was brought in as a very well-compensated and highly regarded prospect, and Bichette, who was a very high draft pick for the Blue Jays just last year, Jones was drafted in the 18th round, and yet you look at his numbers and they're every bit as impressive, at least on the surface, as what Guerrero and Bichette are doing.
Congratulate that scout, right?
Yeah.
That scout who turned in Bradley Jones, say, well done. College of Charleston, 18th round pick. I was talking to our hitting coach and I said, why? Why did he go in the 18th round? Why didn't people think higher of him? And he said, the attitude that Bradley Jones portrays is one of laid back, that you're looking for some guy to be super intense out there. And Bradley Jones, whenever you see him, he's relaxed, he's laughing, and then he just goes to work. Picture your batter who's standing away from home plate, and the bat's resting on his shoulder, and just relaxed, and the pitch comes in, and just like today, took ball one, took ball two, took ball three. After Bichette had bounced a single into right field, and Guerrero had lasered a single into left, and the pitcher relaxed and threw a 3-0 right down the chute, and it was gone. It was out of the ballpark, and was one of those Jose Bautista line drives where he hits it, and you go, that's a home run. That's a three-run homer right there. He's strong. He homers to both sides. I think that half of his home runs have gone to right field or thereabouts this year. And I've been really impressed with Jones as a natural ball player, not just at the plate. He was a first baseman / left fielder in college. In instructs, they tried him out at second base. I love watching him play second. Played first base today. Plays it great. Played third base already this year. Whenever Vlad needs a day off, there's Bradley Jones at third base. Plays third base great. So I see nothing to complain about with him, and that offense just keeps on going.
Looking at when we look at the Blue Jays bullpen and kind of, you know, the stability of it or the lack thereof, I think we always look to the minor leagues to see, well, are there any guys who are kind of coming up the ranks who, you know, who could be future relievers in a big league bullpen who have been impressing as they come up? And there's a third round pick out of last year's draft at the University of Arkansas by the name of Zach Jackson. I've seen you tweet about him a lot, and, you know, he's got the 2.37 ERA so far for you guys down there in Lansing. What have you thought of him so far?
You can't see his pitch. You can't pick it up. He gets the left shoulder up high into the air, and the right arm reaches all the way back like he's picking something up. It's that Tim Lincecum style almost. And then suddenly here it comes in. Now, I heard that he was throwing 95 to 97 back in college. I think we've got him 93 to 94 right now. We'll see if he adds ticks of velocity to it. But if you're not picking up the fastball, and then he's got a wipeout curve, you've got no chance. And right now, it's the same thing if Bo or Vladimir Jr. get out. I'm very surprised. If a batter gets a base hit against Zach Jackson, I'm surprised. Wow. Nobody's getting hits against him right now. The next step for him is command. There are some counts against him. He comes into the game and you go, oh, it's a 3-2 count. And he struck the guy out. It's a 3-2 count. He got this guy. So as long as that command improves, as long as he keeps on figuring out how to make sure that his mechanics are consistent, oh, yeah, he's a major league reliever.
You know, Jesse, we could go up and down the roster with you, obviously, but, you know, who are some of the other guys in Lansing that you think the Blue Jays fans, you know, maybe should be paying a bit more attention to right now?
I think it's worth knowing the name of Justin Maese. M-A-E-S-E. That's going to be your next name that people are going to see and not know how to pronounce. It was a third-round draft pick in 2015, taken out of El Paso, Texas, East Letta High School. And they've already retired his uniform number in both football and baseball because he was a heck of a quarterback. Justin Maese is quiet. When you talk about poker face, he has no idea what he's thinking out there on the mound. He's got a four-seam fastball in the mid-90s. His two-seamer has devastating sink. He's got a slider, and this year in the offseason, he told me, hey, I found a changeup. He's the only pitcher in the majors, the minors, professional baseball with three complete games this year. and his nine-inning complete game, because the other two were 7 and 6, so it's a little bit of a cheat. But the nine-inning one was 103 pitches, and he strikes everybody out, and he gets ground balls. And two starts ago, he struck out 12 in 7 innings. I think there's something there. I love his approach. I love the fact he's only 20 years old, and every single start he gets better. You're going to get strikeouts, groundouts. It's that sinker-slider pitcher with a lot more velocity than you expect if you're a left-handed batter. So Justin Maese, put that name away.
Will do, Jesse. And I would encourage everybody to follow Jesse on Twitter at JGoldStrass. If you want to know the latest with what's going on down in Lansing with some of the exciting prospects down there. Thanks for taking the time, Jesse. Really informative as always.
Hey, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Jesse.
Our thanks to Jesse Goldberg Strassler. Follow him on Twitter at JGoldStrass. He will update you as Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette continue to hit bombs in Lansing. Two guys who could be on a pretty fast track when you think about how far they've come at 18 and 19.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see them up here in September. Yeah, that's not happening.
No, it is not. But like, it's kind of crazy how fast they're coming. Like, they're dominating the level that they're at now, and they're both like 3 years too young for it.
Yeah, it's really impressive, and great stories from Jesse. I mean, that description of Vladdy Jr. walking up to the plate, I feel like I'm in Lansing. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks to Josh Goldberg for stepping in as our producer this week. Thanks as always to Sam McKee, who is our normal producer. A little under the weather right now. Feel better, Sam. You can follow Ben on Twitter at BNicholsonSmith. This weekend, the Yankees are in town. We'll be there, giving you all the coverage that you need. And as I kind of alluded to earlier, next week on At the Letters, who knows? Maybe the Blue Jays, maybe they'll be screwed again.
Or they could be leading the division. I mean, yeah, a lot changes in a week.
Maybe they sweep the Yankees and the AL East is turned upside down.
You never know.
Who's to say? But thanks as always for listening. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. And we'll talk to you next week on At the Letters.